Welcome to another edition of the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Representative Tom Tiffany. He represents the 7th District of Wisconsin, member of the Natural Resources Committee, also Judiciary, and will join us in just a moment. First off, World Ag Outlook Board Chairman Mark Jekinowski takes a look at the current milk production forecast for 2024.
Year over year, milk production is expected to increase as it always does. Yearly growth in milk production, 2024 expected to be up about 2.1 billion pounds relative to 2023. So the 2024 milk production is at forecast at 229 billion pounds compared to 226.9 billion pounds this year.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Tom Tiffany, representing the 7th Congressional District of Wisconsin. Welcome back to the show.
Tony, it's good to join you once again.
Well, the first time we had the opportunity to meet was back in, I believe, June at the Capitol. And, wow, there's been a lot that's gone on between the time we met and now. We'll touch on some of that in a moment. But a little background about you for those who don't know who Representative Tiffany is and your ties back to ag. I know one thing for sure, ag economics degree, and you're a Falcon, right?
Yeah, went to college at UW River Falls in western Wisconsin, got an ag economics degree and put it to good use for a number of years. And the farm background really helps when we're talking about the agricultural issues.
Well, let's kind of roll into one of the things that's happened here over the last week or so, and really is not something that just popped up. It's actually a congressional answer maybe to the administration. We're talking about whole milk in schools. What's the background on this?
Yes, so what we've seen with the Biden administration and the United States Department of Agriculture, they fund and have some control over the school lunch programs. And what they've been saying is that the school lunch programs, federal money cannot be used for being able to provide whole milk or a variety of types of milk, including chocolate milk, that type of stuff. And so USDA is saying we're going to restrict you school lunch programs that get federal money from being able to utilize that money for other types of milk than what we dictate to you, which is oftentimes, I like to call it, water imitating itself as milk with, 1% milk, stuff like that. And I think that decision should be left to the school lunch program providers. I know many of the people that run school lunch programs across my district, and boy, they understand the need for good, nutritious food. They know how to create a good food program. I think we should trust them rather than having a federal government that takes a one-size-fits-all approach. And so as a result of that, Tony, we created a bill that said, USDA, you cannot prevent schools from offering a wide range of types of milk, including whole and chocolate milk.
And again, this is not something that we're necessarily trying to see a change of for the first time ever. It was allowed at one time. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I harken back to when I was a kid. We always look forward every Friday we could have chocolate milk. And so, yeah, they've always had the freedom to do this. And where it goes to is you go back to the Obama administration. Many people will remember that Michelle Obama made this her cause to change the food that's being offered in school lunch programs. And I'm sure her intentions were good, but in talking to school lunch program providers at that time, they were like, we're throwing away more food. Some of the things they're dictating to us from Washington, D.C. are actually not turning out to be not beneficial to children's health and nutrition. And so I go back to, let's allow our local school lunch programs, our local schools, to decide what they're going to provide for a school lunch, rather than this one-size-fits-all notion that we know best in Washington, D.C. via the United States Department of Agriculture.
Do you think we, as a collective, hit a point in our society where anything that said fat on it had a negative stigma, if you will? And really, when we're talking about whole milk and there is a fat content in there, it's not like you're talking 100% fat content, right?
Yeah, there's you've really hit the nail on the head there, in that I know when we had debate on the floor this week, one of the people arguing against it said, we've got all these experts that say you shouldn't be doing this, shouldn't be doing that. Well, the experts have really misled people, I believe, over the last few decades, especially, I mean, I'm of an age, I remember when they were saying, boy, we shouldn't be serving whole milk. We should not have butter. We got to pull all this fat, any food that has fat in it, and pull it out. That's not the problem. People do need fat in their diets, and especially children need fat in their diets. The important thing we need to do is make sure that they, I think along with allowing schools to allow a school have their own school lunch program, they should make sure kids go out for recess and get some good exercise, because it's that combination of things that creates a healthy child. And so, yes, you are correct that this movement to try to remove all fat has actually been counterproductive to people's health. And if I could just extend the point a little bit further, Tony, think about childhood obesity has gotten worse and worse in our country over the last couple of decades. While we've had these food standards in place, these food guidelines in place, clearly they're not working.
Now, this is H.R. 1147, the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act of 2023, introduced by the chairman of the House Ag Committee, G.T. Thompson. It's passed the House. What about the Senate side? Are you seeing any traction there? Because obviously to get this across the finish line, it's got to be signed into law.
Yeah, I want to thank Chairman Thompson of Pennsylvania for putting this forward and putting his weight behind it. It's really appreciated. I don't know what's going to happen in the House, but they should take it up expeditiously. And I think about, like, my home state Senators Johnson, and especially Senator Baldwin, they should be championing this, especially because we come from the dairy state, Wisconsin.
Let's switch gears. I don't think I mentioned that you are sitting on the Natural Resources Committee, Judiciary Committee, and Chair of Federal Lands. So what's been happening this year in the first part of this congressional session in natural resources?
So really what we're trying to do is allow active natural resource management, whether it's in regards to mining, forestry, all those type of things, offshore drilling. We are trying to allow those things to happen in a permitted process, do it in a smart manner, but make sure that we are independent here in America, because we've seen what happens when we're no longer energy independent. The military talks regularly about how we are not producing the minerals to be able to create the items that they need to have a strong military, very concerned about that, especially in relation to China. And so we're talking about let's lighten up on the red tape, especially that was created in the previous session of Congress, and give people more freedom to be able to produce. Utilizing natural resources is at the heart of our prosperity. We need to be able to utilize our natural resources. And you know what, Tony? Over the last few decades, we have gotten so good at limiting the amount of environmental harm. We know from 60, 70 years ago that we weren't doing the right thing, that we needed to do better to keep the environment clean. We are doing that. America is a world leader. And I believe we can do both, protect the environment while also utilizing our natural resources for our prosperity.
Well, we've taken up quite a bit of your time here, but we sure appreciate you carving out some time to visit with us, update us. Congratulations on the passage of the Whole Milk bill as well, and we look forward to visiting with you again soon. Will you come back and see us?
Yeah, thanks so much, Tony, for having me on, and Merry Christmas to all of your listeners, and we really look forward to the new year coming in 2024.
It's the Honorable Tom Tiffany, representing the 7th Congressional District of Wisconsin, member of the Judiciary and Natural Resources Committees, on the Agribusiness Report.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Bob Ray is CEO of Illinois Farm Business, Farm Management, talks about the most asked questions he gets at year end.
This is the time of year where this becomes a really hot topic. Our FBFM staff across the state of Illinois are visiting with farm clients on a daily basis now to talk about year-end planning. And one of the first questions that comes up is this. What should their adjusted gross income be for the year 2023? And to help them analyze that, we think about three things that are not deductible. Those dollars spent for a living and your income taxes and any principal payments that exceed your depreciation deduction, the topic of today's study. In my example on the screen, that comes to $130,000 for these non-deductible expenses. So that's one guideline to help us define where we should land. Now, you might decide that your AGI wants to be lower than that because you want to reduce your tax liability further, and that's okay. We just need to recognize that when that occurs, we are generating income tax deferral, meaning there might be more tax that needs to be paid sometime later. But again, if that's the plan, that's a good plan. Just want to recognize when those things are occurring.
Another topic that comes up at year end, trade-in values.
One of the key effects on purchases occurred for years ending after December 31 of 17, where trades of machinery really don't mean anything anymore. We have to reflect in our books and records the full purchase price of the asset, and we also have to reflect the trade-in value of the asset we're giving up. And the trade-in value is a taxable sale, even though you really receive no money for it and you don't have a deposit to take to the bank. The trade-in value is treated as a sale, but the full purchase price is available to use as a full deduction.
That's Bob Ray, CEO, Illinois Farm Business, Farm Management, and this is the Agribusiness Report.
Countdown 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today from the 7th Congressional District of Wisconsin, Tom Tiffany, serves on Natural Resources and Judiciary Committees in the House. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Countdown 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
A first-of-its-kind USDA grant program is increasing food sovereignty and supply chain resiliency within tribal nations.
USDA Rural Development, with the help and expertise of the Agricultural Marketing Service, has created this program as a direct response to requests from tribal nations.
Rural Development, Rural Business Cooperative Service Administrator Karama Neal says four tribal nations are inaugural recipients of Indigenous Animals Harvesting and Meat Processing Grants.
These first four awards total more than $4 million. There will be nearly $50 million in awards that will be made eventually.
In terms of what grants will mean for specific projects, the administrator points to creation of local tribal-owned businesses and jobs associated with such entities, as well as a source for processed meats to assist tribal families in need.
So when you think about that longer-term aspect, those are the kinds of things that we're looking forward to seeing.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.